Okay, so basically what I wanted to do today is review with you and then elaborate on stuff that you've already seen. Not all, but a large part of the parameters and the scope of Kibud Avim. Our last Chabura was on Mora, so Kibud, which is obviously the more positive form of honor as opposed to the more passive form of reverence, which we spoke about last time. So there are a number of things which are required of a child. And broadly speaking, I think one can very neatly distinguish between three categories. There's kibud b'maisa, there's actions we have to do, there's kibud b'machshava, which is very, very intriguing, what thoughts or emotions are part of kibud avim. And then lastly, what I gave you makor for today is kibud b'dibur, that was kibud b'dibur, that would be the third thing. And then you could kind of put amida, standing, in either as its own category, or perhaps that's part of action. So we'll try to touch on some of the highlights, if we can, time permitting, of all three or four of those. And those are the things that was that we were learning about this week. Starting in Mirtz Hashem next week, tomorrow there's no Zman Seder, I think, because it's Yom Yun. But then next week we'll try to get in is at least two very important topics that are very, very connected, which has to do with the finances of Kibud Avim. All these things you have to often do for your parents. Are you supposed to pay for them? Your parents are supposed to pay for them? What if your parents cause you damage financially and that stuff? So, someone once said, in general, not about Kibud Avim, it doesn't get real until we start talking about money. So, there's a financial discussion when it comes to Kibud Avim as well. Your parents want you to visit, so who has to pay for the plane ticket? These kind of things. If your parents need food or drink and stuff, things we saw already. So who has to pay for that kind of stuff? Anyway, that we'll get into next week, and then we're rolling in Yirtzeh Hashem. Okay, so in terms of the physical activities, the Gemara, and we saw this at the beginning of the week, the Gemara told us, the famous Gemara, ma'achilu mashke, malbishu mechase, machnis umotzi, right? Yes, to feed them and give them to drink, clothe them, give them physical protection, and basically take them where they need to go, machnis umotzi. The Yerushalmi adds, intriguingly, just to round it out, umanio, your father's and mother have shoes, supposed to get them shoes, and the Tosefta also adds umarchit panav yadav raglov, so we have to wash them or bathe them. Basically, the common denominator of all of these is that we have the obligation to provide our parents all of their physical needs. The tour, just very succinctly says, you got to give them the food and the drink, and maybe shamish them, you should take care of them in all the ways that shamish would do for his rabbo. The Shulchan Aruch actually then lists some of the specifics, at least in the Gemara, and some of the Mefarshim then add the issue of shoes and the like. The Aruch HaShulchan makes the point, which again we've made in the past, that all of these shimushim apply to the mother as well. Kiderach shehaben yachol shamsha. Right, not everything that you can do for your father can you do for your mother, especially we're talking about bathing and things like that. Even bathing your father, let alone bathing a mother specifically, we'll actually discuss, but that's what the Aruch HaShulchan is alluding to. There are certain things that may be a little more complicated for a mother or a son and a daughter, etc. But for the most part, says Aruch HaShulchan, anything you can do, whether it's the mother or the father, is really necessary. And the basic point is that in the poskim really use all these examples, and the fact that various texts expanded even on the Gemara, is that what we're getting at is that we're responsible, if necessary, for all of their needs. And therefore, in some of the more contemporary Sfarim, they don't just limit it to the 5-6 things in the Gemara. What if your parents have an issue with their housing situation, or heat, or they need help going to the doctor, cooking for them, shopping, all sorts of things can be, in these categories, and all of these things are really, really necessary. Even some of the folks who speak about if your parent, theoretically could take public transportation, if it doesn't want to, the folks can speak about, if you can drive them. Again, what if you have to take off work? Or they'll get doctor pay to take them to the doctor. So we'll try to discuss next week the financial implications of this. But leave aside any financial implications, the responsibility that we have to do everything we can for the parents on a physical level is something that is, I think, pretty clear and was relatively straightforward. Just these lists in the Gemara seem to, you know, be taken by the poskim as more paradigms or just examples, but certainly not things that would limit us in any way. Okay, pretty straightforward. Okay. An interesting idea, which I just wanted to mention, I saw, I think I gave you on the sheet, the Harsi, Rutsi Pesach Frank, mentioned the idea that Mikra Adin, if you have something that you need to do for your parents, but you know, you don't want or you can't do it, you can fulfill Kibbut Avim via a shliach. You can have you know, someone else do what you need for your parent, so then that would be seemingly okay. He says it pretty explicitly. Im gavra b'hai gavra b'mitzvah kibud kai u'machuyav laso zeh o'ay de'atzmo o'ay de'acher o'ay de'acher nami mekayim mitzvah kibud k'namashma b'psachim, where you see the example where somebody asks, you know, someone else to do something on their behalf, where there Rabbi Yehuda is criticizing his son for sending someone else, but for some side reason that he lost out on a mitzvah to do to get to the Divrei Torah, but not on the fact that Kibbutz Avim wasn't fulfilled because the son asked someone else to do something for him. Yeah.
So all day terms?
Huh?
All day terms.
That's a very, very sensitive, complicated topic. I think when we perhaps finish the two financial things I wanted to talk about, I mentioned, I think before we move on to broader issues like if your parent is sinning and all sorts of other issues, grandparents and all sorts of other things, I was thinking, at least in the contemporary Sfarim, there's like a whole list of, like, I would call it miscellaneous topics. And the old age home one is a very, very a sensitive one. But let's just say that, theoretically, let's take away that extreme example. Let's just say your parent still lives at home, but needs help, you know, getting dressed or cooking. You know, can't cook anymore for themselves. So if you were to do that, that's a mitzvah daraisa. But if you make sure that someone else does it, it's also mitzvah daraisa. Mitzvah vo yosri v'shlucho. It's always better to do things on your own. But mikra din yoyotze. Now, they point out, I think this Hartzvi is quoted in all of the contemporary Sfarim, so they do point out that a parent has a right to ask for you specifically. Again, notwithstanding if it will compromise you financially, I hope I don't have to make that caveat too many more times, but keep that in the back of your mind. I'm not referring to any financial loss now. But just on the interpersonal, emotional level, if it's really, really important for the parent, which sometimes it is, you know, for you to be the one involved, you know, sometimes, you know, you not showing up, but sending a representative, it could be the most disrespectful thing, right? Context is very, very important. You know, if your parents have a 50th wedding anniversary and you send someone else instead, right, I don't think that's what the hearts you had in mind, right? That would be pretty disrespectful, I would say. But it could be if it's something very limited or something that's repetitive and you have a good relationship and a normal parent relationship and they understand that it's just too much for you, it's too hard for you. On the contrary, the fact that you still nevertheless arrange for someone else to do this for them may be in fact very, very appreciative and appreciated, and that would be absolutely a form of cover. So technically speaking, I don't think that would be a problem. And again, the broader point seems to be that all their physical needs, and to the extent that we can even quantify them, their emotional needs, these are emotional needs we'll talk about a little bit when we get to the issue of Dibor, but still, broadly speaking, these are all things which, as much as we can, we are obligated to see to it that they can, they're taken care of. Now, one of the fascinating things, I think, really, in a sense it's intuitive, but I think it's just fascinating the way the Gemara presents it, is the fact that even within the context of all the physical things we have to do for our parents, the attitude with which we do it is quite seriously. And again, I think in our own lives, we all know this to be true, whether in the context of our Kibbutz of Aim or even interpersonally. You may have had experiences where someone did or didn't do something for you, which out of context, if I just described to you action X or Y, you might give, you know, that's either a very positive or negative thing. But it sometimes can be just the opposite based on, you know, the attitude with which it's done, not everything, you know. If you ask somebody to pass you the food, you know, and they pass you it with like a scowl, so the very act of passing it is not actually an act of friendship. It could be, you know, something much different. So this is, who remembers, what is the Gemara said in Daf Lamed Aleph? The Gemara says, in fact, that this is the case in Kibbutz Avim. What were the examples that the Gemara gave? Anyone remember?
The meal,
exactly. What was the case? Anyone remember? Yeah, please.
Like, you've got the son working in the meal, and
well, that's the second one. What is the first one?
The chicken.
Yeah, exactly. He's feeding him. Yeah, he's giving him some delicacy. What would be a good example now? No, sushi is not. Filet mignon.
Caviar.
Caviar. Rosa. Okay, so you're feeding, you know, the father this delicious food, and the Gemara says, despite that fact, Ishmach alavi pithyoni, that, and nevertheless, says the Gemara, you're basically going to Gehenna, right? Just, and then the Gemara says, before the Rashi and the Rishonim fill in what's going on. But what was in the opposite case is the first thing you mentioned, which is, there are other times in which you do what?
You make your father work
very hard, and yet, you go Gnolam Haba. So if you look, Rashi and Tosfos basically quote the stories more elaborated on in the Yerushalmi. What was the two cases? In the case of the fancy bird, what happened?
When he fell off and we go to Rome, he said, just
shut up and eat. Yeah. Right. You know, you can imagine, you know, you invite your parents over, you know, you maybe, you know, and all of a sudden you're giving out this, like, the most fancy stuff, and your parents are like, hey, where'd you get this from, you know? I just thought you were, you know, a middle manager, accountant, you know, where'd you get all this money from? Hey, nice. And, you know, the father, you know, the child, instead of either explaining it or just being appreciative, says, you know, shut up, old man, and eat. And just be grateful for what I'm giving you. Right? So the fact that he's giving him this fancy food, and, you know, technically, you know, the Gemara did say, you know, ma'achil ma'ashka, you know, I'm giving him, but says, with that kind of attitude, you've totally ruined it. And what was the case? What was the opposite case?
When he started working in the mill, and then the king sent out the father to come up to the king, so the father instead of working in the mill.
Right. So in the end, he says, "Better me. I'll do the harder thing. I'll go to the right." And how come the father can't just stay home and do nothing? The answer is because then they'll starve. In other words, it was a very necessary situation. There's between a rock and a hard place. And the son is willing to sacrifice. That's an extreme, extreme case. But the point the Gemara is, I think, giving very, very vividly, very significantly, is that at the end of the day, even the physical things we do for our parents are actually secondary and heichatimsas for the attitude of respect. Again, we'll get to issues of love in a few minutes. But the attitude of respect that those actions typically connote. So typically, when you feed your parents, that's great respect. Typically, if you send your father to hard labor, that's disrespect. But nevertheless, says the Gemara, if you have a situation, as rare as it may seem to you, in which you actually have the opposite, so we in fact go by not what seems to be on the outside, superficially, but what actually is on the inside. So I was thinking about this, and I saw in one of the contemporary, actually, Musar Sfarim that I like very much, it's not well known at all, in Israel, completely unheard of, called Atara LaMelech, which is a thin one volume sefer of Ashkafic essays, Machshava pieces by somebody named Rav Palm. I don't know if you've heard of Rav Palm. He was Rosh Hashiva in Tar Vadas in Brooklyn. He died not that long ago. A very, very nice day for a very, very normal, balanced, nice Ashkafa, Musar. So the Atara LaMelech quotes this Gemara. He gives a very, very scary, scary, frightening application of this, which I can't even imagine how many times I've violated this, which is when the parent asks the child to do something. You know, clean up your room, can you take out the garbage, you know, can you wash the dishes? And the child responds, basically, you know, with this tremendous attitude, like, how can you get a rest, you know, sure shot, you know, my brothers and my sisters, always me, I'm always the one who has to do this. So even if the child does it, says Rapam, that's an application of this Gemara. You're doing this thing for the parent, but you're doing it with a terribly disrespectful attitude. It's not just, you know, shut up and eat. That, you know, almost unheard of. That would have to be almost a completely dysfunctional relationship. No one here would ever do such a thing. But to give our parents attitude, you know, when they ask us to do something, even when we do it, who hasn't been guilty of that? You know, I guess I said, I told you, I'm on the flip side. Not only am I, you know, still, thank God, I may have asked from a child, but I have my own adolescent and teenage children, so I'm getting, Hashem's giving me my punishment in this world. When I'm on the other side of it. So I haven't shared this with my children yet. I have to figure out the right forum for that. But I think it's a very, very sharp point. And I saw in another, one of the halachas forum on Kibbutz Avayim, they point out, or another example of this would be, if your parents, you know, want to come over for Shabbos, you know, sometimes parents sleep over, again, which by definition, if it's your parents, I mean, it's your spouse's in-laws. So, if, you know, having them over is a form of kibbutz. You're doing like five different kinds of kibbutz at once. You know, giving them, you know, room and board, and but at the same time, if you do it with a sour face, if your parents know, you know, get the sense that you don't really want them there, you make them feel guilty for coming. So then, that would be an example, I think, of this Gemara. You kind of totally, you know, pulled out the rug from under your own kiyum. You get your first. The Gemara was in Daf Lamed Aleph Amud Beis. Yeah.
Could you complain
not in front of your parents? Like, would that violate?
To take the vest. So, yeah, I think as long as your parents don't realize it, I think it's okay. It's a good point. I think that here I can. It's not the hitter mitzvah of it. But yes, I think, you know, whether you articulate, again, feel it, we're going to get to machshava in a second. So there is but on the basic level of fulfilling the obligation, so I think here, it seems clear from the Gemara's examples, that what's problematic is when you convey to your parents your annoyance with them and your really lack of, ultimately, of respect. Do you complain to other people? So that's in general an issue. I'm not discussing the Hilchos Lashon Hara. The Gemara does say that if a person has some real, heavy issue on their mind, best to kind of just talk it out with yourself, meaning, not share it. But the Gemara does say explicitly that if a person needs to unburden themselves because of a particular issue, so again, you have to be careful in Hilchos Lashon Hara not to overuse this or abuse this, but it is a din, it's explicitly in the Gemara, that yisichenu la'achirim, that sometimes if a person really feels burdened with something and they need to talk to somebody, in the world of Orthodox mental health professionals, this is like the heter for pretty much all therapy. But it doesn't have to just be with a professional therapist. Sometimes you need to talk to your friend about something. So that's not unique to Kibbutz Avein, but that's a Lashon Hara point, which I think should be learned. Lashon Hara is really complicated and important. But in terms of the keep it out of aim, I think, to answer your question, though, I think that it would really only be just violating this Gemara, this din, if you communicated that directly with your parents. Okay. So far, so good? Let's move on now to a very small topic, but I think just to review, I have no chidushim on it, assuming you saw the Makaro, but just to review, which is to me very, very fascinating, which is the notion of kibud b'machshava. You don't really have any indication of this in the Gemara or the Rishon, the tour or anything in the Gemara, but nevertheless, you have two Achronim who I think take up this banner, and I find it to be very, very compelling. One is the Sefer HaCharedim, who was, for all I know, went to the army, but nothing to do with political contemporary usage of the term. He was a contemporary of Yosef Karo from Tzfat, or a book of mitzvot called the Sefer HaCharedim. And then, slightly more recently than that, was a contemporary, younger contemporary of the Vilna Gaon, the Chai Adam. So they basically both make the point that they feel very strongly that there is an element, there's an, if you will, an intellectual or an emotional element of Kibbutz Av Ve'Eim as well. When you read the Gemara, which, and I've heard people make this point, sometimes just as a matter of fact, and sometimes it's a critical point, you read the Gemara, you get the sense that making the bologna sandwich for your father is far more important than actually truly respecting him or loving him or anything like that. And the Gemara just mentions these very superficial physical things. The Gemara seems to leave out all this other stuff, which I don't know about you, but if I would ask my parents, I think they would think that the stuff the Gemara doesn't mention is far more important than the things the Gemara does mention. So the Charedim here makes this point, and he thinks very clearly, Matsinu kibud b'lev. There's absolutely a notion of kibbutz that we have to have in our heart. He has a whole drasha, not a halachic, that's a drasha, but he interprets based on a pasuk in Tehillim, in Perek Tezvav. And then he says, v'ma kibbutz b'dvarim b'maaseh b'levad, we didn't even get to the dvarim part yet, we will, but if it's just these external things, below belave, and it's not something you really feel, if you really don't respect him in your heart, if you're just doing things because Hashem commanded, but you don't really feel it, he says, that's not the mitzvah. What's the heart of the mitzvah, he says? This is amazing. And what is the essence of kibud? You have to have such genuine respect in your heart for them, you have to see them as great people. They're great. They're great people. They're amazing. They're gedolim in their field, in some sense. Gedolim v'nichba de'aretz. Shizel ikur kibudam. V'tochkach v'ani chabdem v'dibur ma'isa. And if that's what you really, really feel, so of course then you're going to treat them with respect and get them their meal and, take care of them to the doctor and stuff like that. But the things mentioned in the Gemara, says the Sefer HaCharedim, are really the secondary things. They're, if you will, like the nafka mina. But the real issue, the essence of the mitzvah, is in fact how you truly, truly feel. And the Chayada basically says the same thing. Shiadama ba'inav shem gedolim v'nechzeharet. And then the Chayada adds, and this is striking and really challenging all. Even he says, av shebe'inei shar b'nei adam einam chashuvim klal. Right? Let's be honest. If you ask anyone else in the street, you go to shul, your dad's nothing special. He's not the smartest guy in the shul, he's not the richest guy in the shul, he's not the nicest guy in the shul, he's not the funniest guy. Take any attribute you want. He's just a nice, you know, average Joe. Just sitting in the back, you know, not hurting anybody. And you're supposed to think that what everyone, who everyone else considers average, you're supposed to think that they're great, says the Chayadam. Yes. Zo ikur kibud. This is actually the essence of the kibud. And in that same sefer I quoted to you before, the Atar Lamelech, by Rapam, he asks, you know, the obvious question, you know, like, is we're just supposed to pretend? It's like cognitive dissonance, we should just pretend that, you know, maybe my father's a rabbi. So instead of pretending that he's an average rabbi, I have to pretend that he's a gadolador. My father's a lawyer. So instead of pretending that he's, you know, like a thousand other lawyers, I have to pretend that he's, whatever, the greatest lawyer ever. Why? What does that mean? So first of all, says our problem, number one, is, you know, ain't adam shein lo shav. Everyone's got their 15 minutes. In other words, everyone has their either experience or the aspect of their personality which they truly excel. Maybe overall, you know, not everyone can be the greatest at everything. Of course not. Not everyone's famous. Of course not. But people have attributes in which they really, really excel. So as a Rapam, the key, what the Chayadim and the Charedim are telling us is, we have to focus on those things and use those as kind of as a petach. Focus on the things which are really, really great about your parents. And then you'll really build up your emotional respect and really genuine respect. Wow, my mom, my dad is really great at this, she's really great at that. And then use that, so to speak, and widen that out so that you can, in a general sense, maybe because of that, truly and genuinely admire them. That to hold them in genuine high esteem is really what we're getting at. I'll tell you what other important, and I'll give you, I guess, maybe a way of thinking about it. I think it's helpful, although it's somewhat depressing. Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, who was the famous mirror Rosh Hashiva, went through Shanghai and eventually settled in Yerushalayim for like 3 years, if I remember correctly. They didn't have much giach. So he also gave the Sichot Musar in the yeshiva, and they were so good that he's perhaps more famous for his 3 years of Musar speeches than he is for all of his Lamdash Shurim and Chedushim. And there's a fantastic sefer. If you don't have it, I highly recommend buying it on Parsha Rashavua called Sichos Musar, which are basically 3 years in order of his Musar Shabuzes, which are basically usually, you know, based on the weekly Parsha. Fantastic stuff. So he has in one of the pieces there, where he talks about Kibbutz of Aim, and he describes how he remembers seeing his own father working on and trying to figure out ways that his grandfather, his father's father, was like the greatest at something. And Sedra Chaim Shulevich says, when I was younger, I never understood what my father was doing. Why is he trying to do this? Because until now, he says, I realized that, in fact, that's really the truest form of kibud av'eim, what he calls kibud amiti, genuine respect. Is that you have, it has to be something that in your heart of hearts you truly, truly admire them, and then, memeila, you'll do these other things. But the idea is that you have to work at it. Yes, you know, sometimes maybe your father is a leading surgeon and, you know, wherever, so then it's like, obviously, more easy to admire. But, you know, most people, even most good people, don't have that type of phenomenon. And therefore, says Chaim Shulevitz, really the same thing as Rapam. I don't think there's such a difference between them. You have to work at it. But this is part of the mitzvah, is working at finding that part of their personality. Maybe there's multiple parts, which you truly, truly respect and admire, and then kind of allowing that to kind of color the whole thing. You know, if you want to look at it in a somewhat somber way, but, you know, you could ask yourself, you know, if I, after 120 years, if I had to give a hesped on my mother, if I had to give a hesped on my father, like, what are the things that I would mention? What are the things that I truly admire? You know, that's the kind of, you know, it's not always the nicest way of thinking about things, but it is the way of clarifying. It can get the clutter out of your mind. You know, what would he be remembered by? What would she be remembered, you know, what are the things? If you focus on those things, then you can truly work up a sense of admiration and respect, and think that if you don't have that, so then it's just like this, you know, again, it's better to go through the motions of, you know, doing the physical stuff than not doing it. But it's not really the mitzvah. The real mitzvah, as you see from the Gemara, clearly is the attitude that's supposed to engender these actions and not, so to speak, be absent. Any questions on that? So one last point on this before we move to the Dibur, which is, of course, the emotional point. This is admiration. What about love? In our generation, that's all anyone thinks about, and all of the respect and reverence is the Chiddush. But, you know, it would be a little bit ironic if we focused on all that and ignored the love. And again, it's important to note that the classical early sources do not address this explicitly whatsoever. But the Chayodam, again, right in the beginning, in Siman Aleph, Chayodam thinks it's a given, it's obvious that we're chayav to love our parents. Now, he doesn't ask, but I'll mention, you know, the classical question, of course, of, you know, how can the Torah obligate us to have an emotion? But that's not a new question. How can we love Hashem? How can we have the Acharecha Kamocha? So I don't want to get into that digression now, but that's a famous question. Have you guys learned about that or heard about that question? That's like a classic question. And the answer is the Torah can. The Torah does. So, that's the short answer. So says the Chayadim, this is the same thing. He has three proofs. And remember who saw the Chayadim? What are his three proofs that there must be a mitzvah to love your parents? His three arguments. Anyone remember? Back on Sunday? Whatever you saw, or Monday you saw this? The first thing he says is, you know, the weakest. Shahari b'chlal v'haparecha kamocha. If you have to love every Jew, so then you certainly have to love your parents. Okay. You know, I don't think that would really, you know, next time you write your Mother's Day card to your mom, Mom, I love you like I love every other Jew. I don't think that would cut it, but it's a good way to get started. But the two things that he says which are more ba'anyan, which I think are both very strong and very compelling, is number one is what did we see last week? What did we see in our first Chaburah? Or even the introductory Chaburah 2 weeks ago. That all, the Gemara, time after time, with the various drushes and in various ways, compared Mora and Kibbut Avein to Mora and Kibbut Hashem. Right? The one says, if you honor your parents, it's like honoring Hashem. If you revere your parents, it's like revering Hashem. If you disrespect your parents, the Gemara says, it's like disrespecting Hashem. There was a direct equation back and forth between your relationship with your parents and your relationship with Hashem. So says the Chayodam, there's a mitzvah of Avas Hashem. So just like there's a mitzvah of Avas Hashem, there's also a mitzvah of Avas, your parents. You know, as we said, what about then? There's a creator with a lowercase c, your parents, and there's a creator with a capital C, with the Ribono Shel Olam. So there's like a reciprocal relationship. We learn from one to the other, things we do for our parents so that we can feel them and do them for Hashem, and things which are obligated to do for Hashem, we also have to do for our parents. That's the Chayyadim's second point. And his third point, which is also, I think, in the contemporary context, I just think about my own parents or my own relationship with my children, I think this may be the most compelling. He points out, again, something which we saw from Yerushalmi in the first Chaburah. If you remember, Yerushalmi said, in a very striking way, that Kibbut Av Ve'Em is a mitzvah bein Adam l'chaveiro. And what was the Yerushalmi's, Yerushalmi compared it to something, or he basically compared it to Yerushalmi, says, all the things we do for our parents are basically a form of piraon chov. We're repaying a debt. So at the time, we just mentioned that as a proof that the Yerushalmi held that Kibbut Av Ve'Em is basically a mitzvah v'ram l'chavero, which I think that was a fair point we made then. But here says the Chayodam, in a really, I think, a very powerful formulation. He says, v'chalal ha-piraon. What's the, so your father, when you were a little kid, your parents fed you and dressed you. Now that it's reversed and your parents can't take care of themselves, you're going to feed and dress them. That's repaying the debt. Absolutely. No question about it. You think that's all your parents did for you? You think that's all they would want or expect as their repayment? Says Chayyadim, no. B'chalal ha-piron, she-yehovosam, ha-va-aza, k'derech shahayu olim oso. Just like your parents loved you and did all these things for you out of love, so part of that repayment is that we love them. You can't say that I'm really doing for them what they did for me if I don't really love them. If you ask your parents, you know, again, the average parent, you know, it's not about the externalities. They want to, you know, understandably so, they want to feel like you genuinely appreciate them, that you genuinely respect them, that you genuinely love them. These emotions, including love, there's no question that any normal parent would want that, and I would say has every right to expect it. And, you know, on some level, I think if you ask, you know, And if it was absent, if the parent didn't receive that, if it wasn't reciprocated, on some level, they'd probably get kind of go out of their mind, like, this child, I did all X and Y, I did all this for this child, and they can't even feel. So says the Chayyadim, Mameva, there must be a chiyuv to do that, because that's also part of the Piron Chav. Yeah?
Does that mean you have to love anyone who loves you?
No, I don't think so, because you don't. It's not just that they love you. In other words, they did stuff for you. In other words, let me put it this way. This is not a, I don't think this is what you meant, but to take it in a extreme or almost silly way, you know, if you have a secret admirer, you know, because she loves you, well, Mamela, I have no choice, but you know, I have to love them. Someone else's, you know, just, you know, unrequited love for you, that does not create a chov obligation, or just because they, quote unquote, love you. If you don't appreciate their love, that hasn't. If you couldn't care less about their love, then they haven't really done anything for you. But they've done something for themselves. They haven't really done anything for you. But I would say, if you have a good friend, maybe the friendship is on the same level as Kibbutz Avim. If you have a friend who really, you know, loves you as, you know, David and Yonasan type of love, and as a result, you know, he does stuff for you. So then I think that, yeah, part of being a mensch is, you know, not just, you know, doing the things for him, but, you know, feeling that same kind of friendship. And if not, then you shouldn't take advantage of the fact that he feels it for you. You know, but to keep on taking it, the things that he's doing for you, the friendships that they're doing because of their feelings of friendship and social love for you, and to not repay it, I would think that we would consider such a person a jerk. Yeah.
Is the hard of pure cause the reason why parents can be more called a cover?
Yes. Well, again, we on almost every shir so far, and we're going to probably do it again today, we'll mention that parents can be mochel. Even though it's a separate sif in Shulchan Aruch later in Siman, but can parents be mochel? So we've let the dogs out. But how do you understand that parents can be mochel? So yes, the easiest way to understand why parents can be mochel is exactly this point. It's really things that you owe them, right? The bank could be mochel on my mortgage. It won't be, but it could, right? But I can't be mochel on it. They can be, because they're debt. So, parent, if you owe it to them, in a sense, it's really their thing, it makes sense why they can be mochel. The question, which we'll get to then, you know, when we get to the issue of mechila itself, the question we'll get to then is, what if you understood, as we saw, many did, that Kibbutz Avim was really Mitzvah Ben Olam Makom. So if it's Ben Olam Makom, so how can your parents forgive a debt you owe Hashem? Right. I can't tell you, you know, not to pay him. You know, if he owes you money, I can't tell you, if you owe him money, excuse me, I can't be mochel that. Right? It's not my debt to be mochel. So that we'll try to discuss in time. But yes, the easiest understanding for Mechila is exactly this point. Yeah?
You say Ben Olam Makom not the thing from myself, you and Hashem, then what if they put it on a feeling of obligation more than love, that they...
Enchanami. The Chayyadam is... Well, you still have the other 2 points of the Chayyadam.
Okay, but just on that point, you could
always... Listen, I think... I'll rephrase this in a less technical framework. If you grew up in a family in which you did not feel that your parents loved you, right, a horrific, tragic reality, I can't think of that many things that would be worse than such a childhood, right? So are you obligated, despite that coldness, to love them? Right, so I would say, according to Chayyadim, certainly that last point would for sure not be there. And again, when I said some miscellaneous or other topics, one of the things that you won't find so explicitly in some of the older sources, but in the more recent Sfarim, just we're more sensitive to things, I think, in our generation, some of the more recent Sfarim do speak about Kibbutz Avim with abusive parents. You know, what are the obligations for that? And without getting into all the details now, I think suffice it to say that the simple answer is, I wouldn't say hakol mutter, but it would be a different level of responsibility or obligation in that kind of case. I know other cases, I would say slightly less extreme, but also really bad, where you had not so much abuse, but abandonment. Right? This happens, unfortunately, it doesn't happen often, I would think, but sometimes it happens in a case of divorce. You know, not to be stereotypical, but because it doesn't happen that often anyway, but to the extent that it happens, I assume it's more often that it would be a father, but every now and then you hear about stories of a mother too. But sometimes, you know, the mother got custody and it wasn't, you know, sometimes it all works out nice, and twice a week and every other Shabbos, you know, the father is with the kids and they have a nice relationship with both parents despite the difficulty of a divorce. That happens. But you have other times, and I know people like this who, you know, after the divorce, you know, one of the parents, and in the case I'm familiar with, it was the father, you've never heard from him again. I mean, basically didn't even know he had a father. Or the mother got remarried and everyone thought that was the real father because the other father just disappeared. So what do you do then? You know, I remember, just to give you just one little story, but I had a friend where this occurred, and he had nothing to do with his father for like 30 years when his father died. So he was told, and if he would have asked me, I would have told him the same thing, that Mikra didn't have this at Shiva. But what he ended up doing is the last thing he wanted, given that relationship, or lack thereof, was for all his friends or other people to come to their Shiva call, like, what's going to talk about? He had nothing to say. So he actually said, I don't want any visitors. I think he had a pretty quiet and lonely week. But given the circumstances, he preferred that rather than having to talk about his non-relationship with his father, with, you know, every coworker and every shul member who would otherwise come to visit him. So those are painful stories, but they unfortunately exist in the real world. So I think, yes, the in our, given what we're learning today, we're talking about it in halachic terms, you know, pure and cold. But in the real world, it's even more visceral than that. And I think the answer is yes. This is a halachic framework. I think intuitively many of us feel like, if you have parents who really love their child, you know, I think intuitively we'd feel like, you know, how can you expect a child to really reciprocate that? It's to just initiate the love. And I think that this chayodim is a halachic framework, which really, I think, illustrates, you know, that exact that actual point. Okay? So we still have hopefully two more things to do. Let's do Dibor, and then hopefully we'll have a chance for a few minutes even to do the issue of Amida. Okay, so far we did, broadly speaking, the issue of Kibud B'Maisa, your attitude when you do the Masim, and now we just saw the issue of Kibud B'Machshava. What about Kibud B'Dibor? So again, on the one hand, in our Gemara we don't see this directly, at least not initially, is we kibud machilu mashkeu, that wasn't listed. However, the Chayadam quoted a Mechilta, which actually says that the most basic kibud is bidvar, and it's a chiddush that you do the other things, but the way you talk to or about your parents may even be the most basic form of kibud. But even if you don't take that medrash, there is another Gemara in our Masechta, in Kiddushin, on Daf Lamed Aleph Amud Beis, which is not as direct as the one we originally saw, but nevertheless, the Gemara, when it looks for examples of Kibud Bechayav, in the lifetime of the father, now, what do you mean the lifetime of the father? Did we already say that in the lifetime of the father, you feed them, and you dress them, and you clothe all that stuff? So the answer is, those are things when you're in the presence of the father, of the parent. What about if you're not in the presence of the parent? Is there a way that you could talk about your parent that is demonstrating respect, or if you did it wrong, the opposite? And the answer to that is yes. And that was the very interesting Gemara that talked about, even the exact case is a little bit unclear, but basically you go somewhere and you need something or you want a favor or something like that, and says the Gemara, if you know, if you listen, can you do me a favor? Can you do this for me? And they'll do it. But you also know that these people, you know, have respect for your father or your mother. So if you would say, can you do this for my father? Or, you know, I'm Ron Gottlieb's son. Could you do this? So you might have thought that's a little bit cynical, or, you know, protectia, it's like not so nice. Says the Gemara, Adarabah, that's a mitzvah. Because then, when they'll do it, that is a form of keep it to your parents. You see, look, they did it for you. That's a way of being tola, versus, you know, the things that people are doing, even if they would have done it for you. But if you could manipulate, in a certain sense, in the better sense of the word, the scenario in which they are doing it for your father, for your mother, that's actually a form of kibud. And the Gemara gave, you know, that kind of example. And the Rambam, when he quotes this, extends this to, in general, whatever in your words and the way you're talking can in any way, you know, get your parents in there and have their kavod or their mora established that way, the Rambam says you should do it. And that's exactly what the Tur and the Shulchan Aruch above say. V'chein kol kayotze b'dah, not just the exact example in the Gemara, but any kind of scenario which you can imagine, which by, you know, dropping your father's name or asking someone to do something or not do something because of your father or your mother, or, you know, playing upon that relationship, is not, you know, so it's, not only might it help you, you know, which, but protect you, but even if it wouldn't help you because you don't need the help, you could do it on your own, but adarabah, getting people to be doing things ostensibly for your parents is actually an interesting form of kavod. And that's quoted in the Torah Shacharit, straightforward. What about the opposite case, though? That's not in the Gemara, right? But Rashi introduces, what about the opposite case? What if you know it won't work? Right? Rashi says, what if you know, if I tell them, please do it for me, they either may not do it for me because they like me, or they don't know who I am, but they'll do it for me anyway. But if I mention, you know, if you do it for my dad, that jerk, I hate that guy, I don't want to do that. So says Rashi, I think very recently, so then it would be disastrous. Don't mention your father's name, because Adaraba, by them not doing it, you have brought an embarrassment on your father. That's a genai hulo. Right? That would be terrible. That's interesting. The Shulchan Aruch doesn't mention that, but it makes a lot of sense. But the Beis Yosef did quote a Ramah who seemed to disagree. Beis Yosef quoted Ramah that said, no, you should always mention the father, and as long as, even if they don't like your father, but as long as they're going to do it anyway, you know, so what? At least, you know, maybe they're going to do it for you, and they wouldn't have done it for your father if they don't like your father, but given that they're going to do it, and you mention your father's name, somehow that will work out to be a form of kavod. And in fact, the Taz actually poskes this way. The Taz is just the very act of asking for, do this for my father, do this in honor of my father. The very act of asking, says the Taz, is really the kavod, whether that's why they're going to do it or not. The Taz does say, though, if you really know that they don't just not respect your father or mother, but they hate them, and they would have done it for you, but the second you mention your parents' name, they're not going to do it. So al kerei kafta the Taz, you don't have to lose out on the thing for that. So then he says, in that case, it's better not to mention it. And then you have the discussion that comes up in the Shulchan Aruch, the Prisha, the Shema, the Shah. What if you're not sure? What if you're not sure? You know, I don't know, you know. Maybe they don't know who my parent is, or maybe I'm not sure what the relationship was. I know they once used to be friends, now they're not such a good friend. I'm not sure. So what you do in that case? So this is also machlokas. But I think the majority opinion goes like in the Prisha and the Ramah. The Ramah says, if you're not sure, then it's Rishus B'yatzma. Then it's up to you. If you want to mention them, go for it. If you don't want to mention them, it's also okay. So I think that is on this level, we'll get to, how come none of us do this really? We'll get to that in a second. But on this level of just a straightforward psak of what emerges from the Gemara, I think the consensus is that view that you see in the Ramah, and really was already in the Prisha on the tour, of three levels. If you know that they're going to do it for your father, for sure ask, even if you wouldn't otherwise need to. If you know they're for sure not going to, then don't, it's an embarrassment. If you're not sure, then you have the choice, harishus biyado. Now, the Nachalas Tzvi, who I didn't even realize, but on the bottom of your Shulchan Aruch, you have this, the section of the Otzer Mefarshim. So there, if you saw it, it has the quote, the Nachalas Tzvi, who I think addresses what I was thinking about the whole time I was learning this, which is like, I can't even remember if I ever did such a thing. It's just a weird thing. Anyone, you usually, you know, go to the dry cleaners and say, hey, you know, my father... You know, I just recently, when I was home, I was at my parents' for Pesach, so I was dropping something off the dry cleaners or the tailor, and I need to make sure it got, like we were leaving, going away to a hotel for Pesach, I need to make sure they got it to us quickly. My father said, take it to the dry cleaner and mention, you know, you're my son, you know, I'm a good customer, hopefully they'll do it. So there, I mentioned it, Mamasha was the fulfillment of this Gemara. I got the benefit of it, because they might not have done it that fast for me. And, you know, my father became chashuv. You know, they did it for him. That's what the Gemara says is the kavod. But that's really because I knew that I might not get it done otherwise. If I just gone, if I lived in Florida and that was also my cleaners, and every time I would go in, I have to say, hey, you know, can you get this to me by Tuesday? Can you do that for my father? Like, I don't know, does anyone talk that way?
When I worked in a restaurant, my father called in an order. We had a chashuv thing.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, but that's because you worked there?
No, I worked there.
Okay, so that's really about your kavod.
No, I didn't do it. Well, it is about my kavod, but I guess it's kavod with my father.
You were showing your father kavod if maybe you gave him priority or something.
No, it wasn't me. It was that my father gave him priority.
Because of you. Yes, I don't know if that would be...
That might not work well.
No, it's fine. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. Anyway, the bottom line is, it seems like a little bit awkward in our modern, I think, contemporary situation. So the reason I think that we're okay is the Nachlas Tzvi insight. He says, listen, most of the things that we are talking about, like in our regular everyday life, are things that when we ask someone, either as a favor or bring them a job, or dry cleaning, or you know, order lunch from the takeout place, whatever it is, we ask them, in his words, stam. We don't say, can you do it? When you say do it for me, it's like, you know, when you're asking for a real favor. But in an average thing, without a favor, you walk into the restaurant, you order something, you call the kitchen repair person, you say, can you come over, my sink is broken. You don't say, can you do, you know, in honor of me, can you do that? We don't, people would laugh at you, you'd sound like an idiot. So we just ask for things done. Can I hire you to come over and do this? Can you come and do me a favor to do that? So says the Nachlat Tzvi, if you're just asking for something stam, so then you don't need to be mosif your parents' name. It's only if you were going to look for us, so to speak, if you were going to be tola your request on your own kavod, your own personal relationship, and if you would do it in on behalf of your father or his relationship, that would also work. So then the chiyuv is, instead of doing it, you know, on your own 2 cents, do it on the back of your father, and that's not an abuse, adarav, that's a kavod. But in most normal situations, you're not doing it on the back of anybody. You're just doing a transactional relationship. Hi, I'm hiring you to do X. Can you do it? Or, can you do me a favor? But you're not specifically saying, you do this, you know, for me. And on the contrary, I would say, if you, in a normal circumstance, would like go out of your way to like mention, you know, and do this in honor, you know, can I borrow, you know, can you lend me your pencil in honor of my father? I mean, I think they would look at you like you're an idiot, and they would think your father must be a megalomaniac. I don't think that would be, you know, kibbutz at all. I think that would be ridiculous. So I don't know how many applications this exact scenario of the Shulchan Aruch and the Gemara have, but it's just, it's a new halacha. It's a good thing for us to keep in mind. And it may be, at least in certain circumstances, relevant. The broader point is that there are a number of ways in which we can, bedibor, bedvarim, be mechabed our parents. If you just give me 5 more minutes, I think we'll try to focus and get most of the things I wanted to say done. So again, just a few things which I didn't even put on the sheet, just broader posts which I think are very relevant to our lives. Number one is, in general, the way we speak to our parents, not raising our voice, speaking benachas, which, you know, typical parent, you know, have to correct their child many times over things like that, or maybe in my case. So that the Sefer HaRedim points this out. So this is also part of kibud b'dvarim, just speaking soft language. That's the most basic form of kavod. The Aruch HaShulchan says something which I think speaks so much to our contemporary world. Says Aruch HaShulchan, do I have to speak to my parents in the third person? Would Abba like the bologna sandwich? What could I do for Abba? Right? And why would you have a hava mina to do that? Because even though most of us aren't makbid on it, but that's the thing you have to do for a Rebbe. You know, would the Rav like such a thing? Can I get the Rosh Hashiva this? So maybe I should do it for my parents too. There's a lot of interconnection between those two areas of halakha. So says Aruch HaShulchan, no, no, no! Adarabba! Not only do you not have to do it, you shouldn't do it. Why? Because doing that would reflect a very formal relationship. And Adarabba, the parent relationship will have respect and mora, but they're supposed to be an intimate and love. And if you would speak, you know, that way about a father, that would be a very, very kind of painful thing. I think it reminds me, I don't know if you were at, some of you were maybe at the Shir, I think it was for Shana guys, before Pesach I spoke about Heseba. And the Gemara talks about how you, if you're at your father's Seder, you lean. If you're at your Rav's Seder, you don't lean. And the Rishon was speaking about, what if it's your father who is your Rebbe? So we generally assume that you would lean. But without naming any names, over the years there have been various stories of different people in that situation who didn't lean. And it's kind of a tragic situation where, you know, even though it was their father, but the relationship was more one of Rebbe Talmud. Right? Now, whether that really exists or just hypothetically, I think we would basically consider that a tragedy. So that's what the Aruch HaShulchan is saying here. It's not an act of kavod to be talking about your father in the third person. It's a reflection of a certain distance, which would not be actually in a desirable part of the relationship at all. Again, as we mentioned, I don't think you should be calling this, you shouldn't be calling his first name either. Or, but, you know, nicknames that he wants or whatever, you know, that's, but it's a separate issue. But that there should be some intimacy, which is a little bit casual, I think that, says Aruch HaShulchan, that's absolutely necessary, etc. One last point on this, which I saw in one of the contemporary Sfarim, but they actually quoted it from the Sefer Hasidim of all places, which is a classic teenage situation of, you know, you're out late or something, you know, your parents are worried, you know, if you don't come home on time, or you're traveling, you're going away on a Shabbaton or something like that, and, you know, maybe your parents are a little bit nervous, or maybe the Shabbaton is in the gush or something like that, you know. So it says, if you're, it doesn't say you can't do these things. So it says, if you know that your parents are worried, so you have a chiyuv when you arrive safely to call them and tell them you're safe. Don't let them worry. You know, it's that anguish that you create for them is a real thing, and therefore there's a mitzvah of kibbutz to call them or write them a letter or send them a text or whatever we would do in our day and age to let them know I got there, everything is okay. Last but not least, just to mention the issue of standing. The Gemara has a number of stories where it describes different Amoraim or others standing when their parents came. The most beautiful example the Gemara talks about, Rav Yosef, when he heard his mother approaching, he said, oh, the Ravona Shlom is approaching. He would stand, you know, for the Shechina when his parent would come. And we assume that standing for a parent is also a din of kavod. Very fasciningly, the Pesachei Tshuva or the Kiva Eger there on the page Shulchan Aruch, so even if a child is, God forbid, blind, they still have to stand up. And even if the parent is blind, there's still a mitzvah to stand up. And the Chazon Ish adds, if the parent is blind, then you should let them know or someone should that you stood up. Again, not to like curry favor, but letting them know that if they wouldn't otherwise be able to tell, because that itself will give them nachas, that will make them happy to know that their child is being respectful. There are big discussions which we don't have time to get into now as well about the proximity, and when do you have to stand up for them. So some posts can say they're most mekel, not until they're mamish in your dalet amos, not until you get right there. Other posts can say as long as you can see them. Other posts can say maybe you can't necessarily see them, but if you can hear them, you hear their voice, you know they're somewhere. So there's different shitas about this, but everyone seems to agree though that they have to, even those different scenarios have to be when they're in the same domain. So if you're in the house and you're by a window and outside you see your father, even if you can see him, you don't have to stand up. Or you're in the one bedroom and he's in the other, you're in the living room and he's in the kitchen. There are different domains, different rooms, so you wouldn't have to stand up. But that's also a discussion. Another interesting discussion is, how often do you have to do this? So the minhag of Sfardim is to be very machmir, even if it would be 100 times a day. Every time you're in close proximity to the father or the mother, you should stand up. Ashkenazim points out, based on a halacha about kibud rav, that you really have to do it once in the morning, once at night, because the respect you show for your parents should be more than the respect you show for Hashem. You don't need to be doing that more than doing Kriya Shema. But there are different opinions or different approaches on this. But on this, I'll just add, this is maybe the very important point, which is, number one, is parents can be mohel on this. This is one of the places where the Shulchan Aruch himself says, not just Gottlieb says, the Shulchan Aruch says, the parents can be mohel. Is quoted as parents can discuss it, and even the Chazon Ish and other people say a child could, if they want, ask for a permanent mechila. Not just I mean, mochel, is it okay if I don't stand now? But like, is that okay if that's just not part of our relationship? So Chazon Ish says that's for sure allowed. But the reality is, and with this we'll conclude, I don't know too many people who ever asked their parent, you know, can you be mochel me for the rest of my life? I don't have to stand up for you, even if it works. But who has ever done that? And at the same time, most people that I know don't stand up when their parents enter the room. So you could say, okay, they're wrong, you know. I taught you, you teach them. You could. But I think it's also possible to argue that nowadays you have almost an implied mechila. If you remember, I think last year, the Aruch HaShulchan said it about standing in your father's place in shul. As Aruch HaShulchan said, nowadays, he says, everyone just goes to wherever their father is in shul and they go to their makom. They don't seem to ask for permission each time. So Zarah HaShulchan says everyone does it. It's just that to become the minug, and if anything, that's a form of respect. But leave that latter point. He just says, if it's something that's so widespread and the parents aren't mocking, it wasn't just like once, but it's so widespread, not just once with you, but not only every time with you, but every time with your friends and your neighbors, so then that can be just like an assumed, implied, universal mechila. So I think that there are those who make the argument for standing for parents as well. It's not just that I didn't do it once, so maybe my parents didn't mind. I've never done it, and they've never communicated that they minded. And guess what? My friend across the street, he's never done it, and his parents never said they minded. In other words, in our culture, I think in most of the families and the communities that we live in, this is not necessarily considered an expectation. There are plenty of things that I could do or not do that my parents would find disrespectful. And unfortunately, I've done them over the years. But the not standing, I don't think that my father or mother would ever feel disrespected by that. Therefore, whether you know, whether we ever had the conversation or not, maybe that would have been better, but I think we like to assume that there's kind of an implied long-term mechila or something like that as well. Okay? So, to you.